Welcome to the Decent Crypto Podcast. Today is Saturday, December 10th, and we are live from New York City. Matt, great sweater. How you doing?
I'm cold, man. It's freaking cold here. No, this is like, you know, I'm only wearing two layers right now, which is the least layers I've worn all day. I had a sweater on over the sweater with a jacket over that earlier. I'm cold. How you doing?
Weather report from Matt. Love it.
It's cold.
Love that. I'm good, man. I'm good. Just catching up still from this news yesterday that left me reeling. The block is like defunct, or what's going on? I see, you know, the wildest stuff is like this news came in about the block, about like, we'll get into it, but like the CEO basically was like gambling the whole company using like loans from SBF or whatever. But beyond that, today I was expecting everything from the block to just be done, right? Then today I have the Telegram feed for the block news feed, and I just keep getting updates today. They're like, here is our Q3 report, Q4 report on this. I was like, what? Who's sending this out? Like, who's actually going through this? And is like, yeah, you know what? I'm gonna continue this. Hold on. I got one that was hilarious. What was the exact one? I was like, there is no way that this is top of mind for anybody at the block right now. What's the last one? Ripple sees promise in carbon credit and gaming NFTs despite market downturn. Dude, that's something the block actually put out today.
The day after their CEO
stepped down because he took too many loans from SBF, including a personal loan of $16 million to purchase a penthouse offshore.
I mean, the total number was like 150 million or something.
Wait, that's insane. It was that high? I didn't realize it was that high.
That's what I thought. Yeah. I mean, let's go to the block because it's probably the front block page story.
That's actually true. Do you think the block has a...
Yeah, they have the best story about it, dude. The block does a good job. the block and like BlockWorks,
I think, are like... I like generally the block where right I go. Here. Unbelievable. The block CEO resigns. It's yeah, wow.
How okay, meta so, is that?
Yeah, I know. Okay, so first loan was $12 million. Second loan was $15 million. And then third loan was $16 million. Personal real estate in the Bahamas. So in total, we're looking at 31 plus 12. What is that? 43. Check my math. $43 million in total.
Why?
Like, bro, there's, well, I know we know what 16 was used for, a personal real estate purchase in the Bahamas, but right. I don't know. Okay, so here it actually says the reasoning. First of which, 12 million to buy out other investors in the company. Then second loan was used to help fund day-to-day operations. Those were both done in 2021, so 12 million to buy people out, 15 million to fund day-to-day ops. How much do you think that
15 million for day-to-day ops for a news website is high? Like, they must have like way
you can
expanded, right?
Hire
like
a lot of journos for 15 million bucks.
Not to mention, like, I mean, the thing is, it's not that big of an operation, right? It's like a website and like one podcast and a Twitter news feed.
Telegram news feed. It's big.
They have a
big research organization. Like, the block research is good.
I mean, they do a good job. I'm just saying, like, for, you know, like for 15 million, like is how much OPEX is that? Like, they also have advertisers, right? Like, they should have revenue. It shouldn't be that they just need to like pay out of pocket for all this stuff. But
I don't know, man. I think look. Media, trad media is kind of dead, even if you're reporting on crypto. You know, I don't know.
It's all about citizen journalism now. Let the citizens get their money from SBF.
Yes, Elon. Elon will fix this on Twitter. I don't know about that actually, but I don't know. Was there anything else like surprising or, you know, that caught your eye about this story?
I mean,
like, what do you think happens here, right? So if these guys took out a bunch of loans from SBF, like, we were talking about this yesterday, but it's like these guys took out a bunch of loans from SBF, you know, to pay for day-to-day operations. like leaving aside the penthouse, whatever, for day-to-day ops, technically that money is still with the company, right? In the company's treasury, if they haven't blown through all of it, it's technically still in the company's treasury. And I mean, or you would assume that maybe it'll get clawed back in the FTX bankruptcy filing or something, right?
I mean, it's a great question. It probably primarily depends on when it happened, right? But my guess is that by the time any of this gets sorted out, if it ever gets sorted out, they will have spent all that money, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just because, like, you know, there's one end of things where it's like, okay, I pulled my money off the exchange. It was within the 90-day like grace period, right? What, you know, like maybe that gets clawed back. Mm-hmm. But like a loan to someone to fund day-to-day operations, and like the loan wasn't given by FTX or even like Alameda. It was like given by like third party company. It's gonna, you know, it's a little bit too messy probably for like the block to get like clawed back, would be my guess. Mm. I think the block in terms of like contagion winds up being one of the less concerning like problems we could have right now. You know what I mean? Like,
definitely.
Yeah, like, is the block insolvent is the question. It's like, it might not matter. Like, definitely. Obviously that is people working there, right? But like, should the block have been insolvent this whole time? You know?
No, dude, think about the two kind of bigger, you know, media organizations within crypto. The block. Now we find out that they're taking loans from SBF to, I guess, stay operational. CoinDesk, owned by Digital Currency Group, which in its own heap of troubles.
Not to mention it sort of kicked this thing off, right? With that,
CoinDesk put out the piece. On FTX,
on the Alameda balance sheet, right? Like that was. Oh, arguably that's right.
That was the actual leak. Yeah,
the actual start of this thing, right? Mm-hmm. Buckworks. When is you know, like,
yo,
like, is there another crypto like media company?
Like, dude, there are basically none. Like, I can't think of Bankless.
Bankless. Dude, Bankless is definitely taking money from someone, right? Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like sheer like audacity that they have in terms of like how biased all of their content is in one direction or another is just like, you know, like I don't know how much Bankless you've listened to lately, but like their ads like are pretty grossly like, we love this product. Everyone use this product. It's the future. It's going to like solve every problem with blockchains. It's going to change everything. Like, I don't know. Why wouldn't they have taken some money, right? Like, they're clearly taking money to like say whatever the advertisers want them to. I'm sure some other shady shit is going on like under the covers there. That's my best guess.
Yeah, I'm not going to speculate, but I doubt they took money from FTX because they're not really fans. yeah. Okay, moving on. I don't really care this much about crypto media. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Getting to the main character, SBF himself. This guy I think his main thing is he just wants to stay in the news as long as possible. And then people just get annoyed of this guy and be like, you know what? Just let him off just so we just don't have to deal with him anymore. Like, let him live in like some weird ass country and like, we don't, you know. I don't know. Maybe that's his plan the whole time. So what happened this week? What's he doing now?
I mean, well, as usual, CZ starting shit, right? he posted some thread, effectively like alleging that like the SBF and FTX employees had been like not the best, like, you know, people to work with, I would say. There were just like a bunch of like allegations that are like kind of unprovable, not really that like important. Mm-hmm. But then of course SBF chimes in.
Yeah, yeah. So like the stuff he was saying, that CZ was saying, he was like, basically it was part of the negotiation where FTX bought back the portion of equity that Binance had originally bought. Like had like in their seed round or whatever, right?
Right,
and
right.
Like that was part of it. And he was like, "Yeah, SBF was such a dick." He was basically saying like, you know, if you don't agree to this, we're going to make this like consequentially bad for all of you, or, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then CZ is basically like, we have all the text messages. Like, it's like, God, I don't understand exactly. Like, this guy is worth like $50 billion, $100 billion. It's like, bro, come on. But anyways, so yeah, he's just going off on Twitter. And then SBF is like, dude, you already won. Like, you don't have to spread lies. Like, this is not the truth. In fact, what happened is you asked for $75 million more than what we initially agreed to. We gave it to you anyways because, like, we didn't want to have you on the balance sheet or yada yada, or on the cap table, like, yada yada yada. I don't know. Like, was there, who knows what the truth is, right?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that, like, kind of like with SBF these days, a little bit like when J.K. Rowling tweets, you're just like, please go away. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, could he really say anything that would change anything or any of our minds about anything?
That's a great question. I have no idea. You know, at this point, what
it's
would
hard
it
for
take?
Me to think, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe like some history of transactions, you know, that they can show us from.
Absolutely wild. Can you imagine if like, yeah, SBF just dropped like all of the like actual data that like we needed to analyze this entire thing
the
entire time?
All but, the like, payments between FTX.
Weeks, like, later.
Yeah, exactly. All the payments between FTX and Alameda. All, you know.
Every blockchain transaction, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like... I mean, even then, like, I wouldn't click it, right? Like, you know.
Yeah, I would wait for like, the... I don't know. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
How many
spreadsheets
have you seen where it's like, this is the list of something, and it's like, all right.
Here's the thing. I'm not necessarily following it that closely anymore because I've just kind of moved on. I'm like, look, this is not in the public domain anymore. This is in the legal domain. This, you know, it's like we can speculate all we want. That's why, like, at this point, I kind of refuse to listen to the interviews that all these people are doing. You know, it's like, yeah. Suzu's doing interviews, Kyle Davies doing interviews, SBF's done like 10. It's like, look, they're all going to say the exact same thing. Nobody's saying anything interesting. Nobody's saying anything new. Everybody's here just to shape the narrative the way they want to. And
yeah.
In a
Do you
way,
think that's what happens? Like you become the main character, and then you can't face the prospect of not being the main character anymore.
Pretty much, yeah, right. I mean, even Elon, right? Like this guy is like giga successful, doing all this shit. He just cannot stop shit posting, and just like putting out like the wildest memes, calling out like senators, calling people like, you know, fat or whatever he's doing. You know, he just can't stop. He just like has to be in on the scene at all times.
Yeah. Hey, I, you know, like you got to get your kick somehow, right?
Yeah, somehow, you know, having like 7 families and you know, like $100 billion is not doing it for him. So just got a shitpost, I guess.
You are,
yeah, where are we exactly? I don't know. I know we're on Elon's 7th family. That's where we are right now. Okay, yeah. Speaking of so the SBF and Suzu thing, this is pretty funny too.
Where, like, I completely didn't even hear about this one.
Oh, dude, so okay. This is the conspiracy that I pointed out like on our podcast maybe a month and a half ago about Alameda intentionally destroying Luna. During that like kind of period you know, the DPEG happened and all this kind of stuff, as a way to basically just destroy Three Arrows Capital. And Suzu basically came out and said that, like, or no, not Suzu, Kyle Davies basically came out and said, like, yeah, we got taken out not because of Luna, but because of Three Arrows. It's like super interesting. First, there's like somebody else called out, I forget who it was that called out SBF for Alameda basically destroying Luna, and then SBF responded and he was like, no, that wasn't us, like, we actually were like a seed investor in Luna, like whatever, and he actually like responded to it, which I thought was super interesting. And then Kyle Davies comes back and he's just like, yeah, we did not go under because of Luna, we actually went under afterwards when all these prices were crashing, and Alameda was taking the opposite side of our positions on certain things on FTX and basically liquidation hunting us, because they knew exactly where we were going to get liquidated, and they were like forcing prices right down to that level, in like an, it, you know, like whatever antagonistic manner, to take us out completely. And he was just alleging that, and SBF responded. He was like, yeah, bro, fuck off. Like, we're not doing that. Like, yeah. So I don't know, man. It's just, all this is so weird.
Okay, so here's the thing, right? Like, when we talked about that conspiracy the first time, I was like, oh yeah, that's totally, totally feasible. But like, at this point, my like opinion of the like capacity for Alameda to do anything really has dropped so, so dramatically that like, I don't actually think that they would have been able to like pull off the like depegging of UST and crushing of 3AC.
That's actually a very much reasonable take.
You know, I mean, like initially we all thought that these were like pretty smart, capable, like giga brain, people. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. And now it's kind of feeling a little bit more like it was probably, it's like they did this
genius
hour.
Thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like they did this genius thing where there's this exact 1 hour window where they had some, they just knew there was like no liquidity, that's the thing, and then they right? like yeah. withdrew all this shit. Yeah. And it's like, wow, that's actually quite genius. And it's like, nah, somebody probably just fucked up somewhere. Like,
yeah,
that's actually the story I'm learning in life, you know. It's like, somebody probably just fucked up somewhere. Like, no.
Okay, anything? You want to hear a new conspiracy?
Yes. Let's go. Yeah.
Okay, so with the whole, like...
Hold on, Matt. Mm-hmm. We need to lead into this. It's time for part two of our latest segment, The Truth-Seeking Ideas. Matthew Blumberg, please.
Tinfoil Matt.
Tinfoil Matt.
Okay. I heard on... Do you listen to the Bell Curve podcast? It's pretty good.
I basically stopped listening to podcasts. But go ahead.
Yeah, I don't even listen to ours anymore. It's, like, that's my bad. That's why the timestamps aren't up to date. There was a guy in Bell Curve that kind of made an interesting case yesterday that I you know, like, I think we all kind of have to look in the mirror and think about, which is like, how much of the rise in Solana was attributable just to like misappropriation of FTX user funds and like mm-hmm. Alameda just like pumping it, and alongside it probably pumping all of the like related like Solana like SAM coins like FTT and Serum and Radium, whatever the fuck, you know, mm-hmm. like why does, you know, who was the marginal buyer there if not Alameda, right? If not like people using, like, I've never heard anyone be like, yeah, Radium, the like curve of the Solana ecosystem is something worth buying, right?
That funny enough, I do. choking on my chocolate almond. But I actually do know Radium buyers. I was actually in on Radium, dude.
Really?
I am the marginal Sol ecosystem buyer, dude. Who's leverage farming all these tokens? Dude, there was a Serum Radium pool paying like 1,500% for a while that was mm-hmm. like really, really minting money for me.
Wait, but no, did you sell your Radium?
Yeah, of course, dude, immediately. Great. Dude, Sol ecosystem DeFi was really fun for like a hot second, you know? It was like, if you had missed a bunch of shit on Ethereum, you could just kind of try and run it back. As long as you were early enough and could dump on the next wave of people, like, it was a good little stretch.
It's all about knowing how early you are, right?
Like, this is the thesis.
You don't actually have to be the earliest, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's just about knowing where. At any rate, you know, the allegation goes something like, okay, like, these guys pumped Solana and all the Sol ecosystem tokens, and that really allowed, like, the alt layer ones to, like, take off from there. Mm. So first it was Sol, then it was AVAX, mm-hmm. eventually it was Luna. You can argue whether that's a layer one or not, right? Yeah. And then, like, sort of correspondingly in much smaller magnitude, it was, like, Phantom and, like, Harmony and, like, Near a little bit, right?
Dude, fun fact, Phantom pumped harder than every other thing you mentioned.
Actually, yeah,
in 2021,
right.
Phantom was the number one coin of any L1.
Huh. So here's the question, right? Like, okay, I can see how this could have played out, where it was like, by being big, Solana paved the way for other L1s to become big, for people mm-hmm. to say, well, if I'm going to value this at that, then I should probably look at like the next closest, like, you know, like once Ethereum is no longer the only viable L1, mm-hmm. like once Solana gets to a certain size market cap, then all of a sudden you kind of have to look at all of the other competitors and sort of evaluate accordingly, you know, whether that's on TVL or like transaction volume or whatever, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So here's my conspiracy theory. And the argument basically goes like, that's why this happened, right? Is that like, there was some kind of like, leverage engine that allowed the market to just pump Solana, right? Mm-hmm. In this case, like it was FTX and Alameda, right?
Okay.
Like that's sort of the theory.
Right.
Here's my theory. And this sort of goes back to like, a lot of people say that like, we probably haven't seen full contagion hit yet. There's probably one or two more shoes to drop and we probably haven't hit bottom. This is like a refrain that I hear again and again in my day to day. What if the next shoe to drop is someone that we never saw coming that was somehow responsible for the, I would argue, equally ludicrous pumping of DeFi tokens back during DeFi summer?
Which tokens?
Like, you think there's no reason for Solana to go up so much other than like, you know, if you think that like the FTX like misappropriation of user funds was what caused Solana to pump that high, Solana actually like provided a little bit of value, right? Like it created block space, like the, you know, you would use it to buy NFTs, like it existed, right? Who is the like marginal buyer of something like Wi-Fi? Right, like why did Wi-Fi pump? Why did Uniswap pump? Why did any of these tokens ever become worth anything? Right, because if you think back to like the Bitcoin Cash days, right, like many Bitcoin forks just kind of dumped, right, and like we never heard of them again, right? Some of them pumped, some of them had their own memes and like, you know, ecosystems and celebrities around them, but many, you know, like those were also just airdrops. So my conspiracy theory goes, well, Uniswap was also just an airdrop. SushiSwap was also just an, you know, like all of these like DeFi tokens effectively were just airdrops. Who bought them?
Okay, I hear you, and I think we're getting close to a bottom now. I love your conspiracy theory. I think we're so far removed from the bull market now, we're starting to forget, dude. This is just what happens in the bull market, man. People buy shit. Bro, think back to 2017. People were buying Litecoin. People were buying Stellar. Think about Stellar, dude. People were buying Ripple. People were buying the dumbest fucking stupid shit, dude. I know Stellar maximalists, dude. I know people who like actually studied this stuff and were like, Bitcoin is cool, Ethereum is fine, but Stellar, this is the truth. Like, I know human beings like that. Bull market, man. Shit just happens.
Okay. This is an effective counterpoint.
But I love the conspiracy. I think...
Yeah. You see what I'm getting at here, right? Like,
I totally do.
The idea is effectively like, oh, you know, it doesn't make any sense for Solana to have pumped so hard. And it kind of looks like some part of that was probably like this inappropriate use of like user funds, right? Like,
bro, here's where I will give Bankless some props. They had an episode, which I didn't listen to, but I saw a summary of on Twitter. And their episode title was The Whole Last Bull Market of Ponzi. And from the summary I read, it was like, look, basically every bull market is a Ponzi. There's like some little core of technological innovation that gets people excited. And those people were already there doing stuff. Like people who are still here now and will be here next year, like they're going to just be like doing random shit, playing around, experimenting. And then once the money printer turns on again, people will be like, oh, what's happening in crypto? And there'll be like a couple good apps, like maybe one or two. And then literally everything else will just Ponzi up, you know? And the way to make money is not to be like really, really buying the good, strong application tokens or whatever. It's just to stay around long enough, you know, get a nice base of capital, figure out which dog coin will pump next, and then just 10x. Like, that's just, you know, that's just how it goes, dude. Like, I don't know, man. Like, dude, like Doge, like just like Dogecoin, right? Shiba. Like, who was the marginal buyer of Shiba, dude? Like, I don't know. Like, there's a really cynical version of this. And then there's like, I don't know, people like buying dumb dog coins that they think might make them rich.
Yeah, no, you know what? You're right. Thank you for that. For that.
Yeah.
Probably back to reality for a second here. I just, like, I've been, you know, surrounded by a little too much of people wondering about fundamentals lately. It weighs on your psychology, you know?
Dude, like, I think that was my first takeaway, is like, I've been questioning, like, fuck, is this all a Ponzi? Is this all going to zero? And I remember this exact moment in the last bear market where I was like, fuck, is this all done? Should I quit my job? Should I, like, not be in this industry anymore? And it's like, that's when you know you're getting close to a bottom. It could still take another year, but you know, that's when you're getting close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to talk about the Ethereum Shanghai fork?
Sure. Yeah. No idea what's going on.
Yeah. So, okay. So the Shanghai fork, right, is like the next hard fork in Ethereum's progress. And it's definitely going to have at least a couple of things. We talked a little bit about the sauce time, but there's unstaking, and then there's like EIP-4844, which makes like rollups cheaper effectively. It's expected to come in March. What do you think that does to the price of ETH? Not financial advice. Does ETH pump or dump when the first like unstaking becomes allowed?
When is this again? February?
March.
In a weird way, I kind of find it to be neutral. Like, I don't really think it's... I think it's hard for us to have pumps in this kind of market right now. But I don't see this as a super, like, dump everything event. I think, if anything, this is validation of proof of stake, like, having worked, the merge having gone well. And people are like, anybody who staked, right, and is like, has held through this whole thing is already down 70% plus. Like, true. There's not that much more like sell pressure coming at this point. And it's also in March, right? If this thing was happening in November, I could actually see more sell pressure because people would be like, I don't know, maybe tax loss harvesting or whatever they're doing, right? But it's a new year. Like, I don't know. I don't really see this as a massive sell event as people would expect, I would think, right?
Well, I mean, you know, like the fundamental analyst would say something like, well, okay, supply and demand, there's at least some marginal supply coming online.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It should be negative for price, but, but I completely agree. I think that like, and you see this sometimes with like unlocks, right, of like VC rounds of tokens where like maybe those tokens have changed hands like over the counter, like prior to the unlock happening, and someone's already up or down however many percent, and like they're not really incentivized to sell here. So for all the same reasons, like I don't see it as bearish really at all.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
On the other hand, like I think it does lead into like I think that the like market structure around Ethereum is changing slowly in a lot of ways that like we don't talk about every day because they're just kind of happening like, you know, in a slow like subcurrent. So we have the burn, right? We also have like the change in tokenomics from the proof of work to the proof of stake model, which like really did like decrease emissions pretty substantially. And then I think we're going to have this third prong of it, which is that like, once it becomes possible to unstake your ETH, it really does de-risk, you know, staking your ETH.
Right.
And at that point, things like liquid staking derivatives will trade likely much closer, generally speaking, to, you know, 100% or 99% or whatever of what they should trade at. And so, you know, like the incentive is for all of the ETH to kind of wind up getting staked. Right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you need enough of it to like pay for gas, right? And buy NFTs. And I just think that like the amount of ETH that will be available like as circulating like sell side like liquidity is not going to be nearly as high as it ever has been.
Yeah. No, I agree, dude. I also think that if you look at the way the supply demand dynamics have changed recently with going to proof of stake and the burn with, you know, combining EIP 1559 and the shift to proof of stake and the fact that we did go deflationary for a little bit in terms of ETH issuance and the price still just going down, down, down. Right. Like, I don't think the tokenomics, like, you know,
matter yet.
Yeah. I just think we're in a time of such low liquidity that we're not really seeing this like crazy level of trading. We also don't have Alameda trying to cause liquidation cascades, whenever it's low liquidity times on the weekends, you know? So,
I mean, it's also like, you know, there's not much use for ETH these days. Right. But someday there will be.
Yeah, exactly. Gas is so low. Like, that's the thing. Like, I'm coming to this thing of like, just demand is the driver. Like, you know, adoption, usage, and in the end, demand. Like, that's the thing.
Hmm.
Yeah. Hmm. That's
it. Demand side economics.
Demand side economics. Decent side economics, baby. Mm-hmm. All right. You got anything else, Matt?
No, I think that's it.
Well, we'll be back in a few days with our final deep dive of Bitcoin month. If you have any recommendations, hit us on Twitter at DecentCryptoPod. Have a good weekend, everybody. Till then, stay decent.
None of this was financial advice, legal advice, investment advice, or any other kind of advice. If you're looking for advice, you are definitely in the wrong place. Until next time, stay decent.